You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I'm tempted to go off today, here on my Sex and Relationship Advice podcast, on Trump's joint press conference with Putin in Helsinki yesterday. The presser where Trump attacked the United States and the rule of law while heaping praise on Vladimir Putin the day after the Justice Department released a mountain of evidence and a stack of indictments that really does prove Russia criminally meddled in our election. That was the same presser where Putin took a moment to let us all know that the P-tape is real. And he did that by bringing up the P-tape unprompted and offering a lame non-denial denial about its existence. So yeah, the P-tape, which is kind of a sex and relationship, sex advice kind of thing, the P-tape, and a thing with deep political implications, the P-tape is real. And Trump's performance in Helsinki was so shocking, so treasonous, that even Fox News talking, demagoguing, lying, smearing heads were critical. I could talk about all that, but I don't want to talk about all that, not anymore, because today I want to focus on something positive. I want to open my show by saying thank you, London. Seriously, thank you to everyone in London who protested last weekend, all 250,000 of you. It was the largest single protest against a foreign leader in London's history, and London's history goes back a bit, a couple of millennia at least. So for a thing to be the biggest version of that thing in London's history, whatever that thing is that we're talking about, that's a really big thing. The people of London recognize Trump for the malignant threat to Western democracy and to simple human decency that he is, and it was a joy to watch. We've been marching and protesting over here for a year and a half while we impatiently wait for those midterm elections to roll around. And the protest in London this weekend, gotta say, it was a real morale booster. And the signs, oh my God, the signs. All in all, you're just another prick with no wall. Your ma was an immigrant, you tangerine roaster. No smelly Trump allowed. Trump, of course, is British slang for an audible fart. Tried to get that off the ground in Savage Love, wrote about it, didn't take, but nice to see it at the protest. Another sign, a bit like Hitler, but his hands are littler. Fuck off, pea brain. And my favorite, we heart the U.S., but dislike pussy-grabbing, fake-tanning, saber-rattling, serial-philandering, white supremacist pandering, compulsive-lying, First Amendment-defying, corporate-whoring, hate-mongering, no-shaming, infant-detaining, immigrant-blaming, Putin-colluding, climate-change-denying, asinine, prevailing, overprivileged, draft-dodging, underperforming, inheritance-squandering, insecure, infantile, business-failing, snake-oil-selling, small-minded, tiny-handed, semi-literate celebrity demagogues. That was genius. On a personal note, London, I lived in you. I lived in London for a year and change, a long-ass time ago. So long ago that I marched in the streets of London myself to protest the adoption of Section 28, an anti-gay law rammed through Parliament by, this is how long ago it was, Margaret Thatcher's government. I've loved London and smart, funny, no-bullshit Londoners ever since. Londoners, like New Yorkers, come from all over the world. So in a very real way, that crowd in the streets of London this weekend represented not just the people of London or the people of the UK, but the people of the world. There were immigrants from all over the globe in that crowd, including thousands and thousands of American expats. There were also tons of ITMFA t-shirts in the crowd. People were sending me screen grabs. Appreciated it. And also in that crowd, joy, positivity, a sense of humor, and a real sense of connection. And I got to say, that's what got us through the darkest years of the AIDS crisis, which is when they threw Section 28 at us in the United Kingdom. And it's what's going to get us through these dark years. So that really helped. Thank you again to everyone in London. This may be our darkest hour, and you came through for us this weekend. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, free with ads, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and coming up on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, which is twice as much Savage Lovecast with no ads. You can subscribe to it at savagelovecast.com. Dr. Debbie Herbenick from Indiana University joins us to discuss dating while being a sex researcher and how that might complicate your romantic life. That's on the Magnum. This episode is brought to you by Movement Watches. Good-looking watches, bracelets, sunglasses, and gifts at great prices. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage.
This episode of The Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of The Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old lesbian who lives in Brooklyn. My question is more broadly about feminism and more specifically about the extent to which it makes sense for me to get involved in my parents' marriage. My parents are both supportive of me being gay, but my mom is way more supportive than my dad, who often tries to make jokes about gayness as well as gender, I think because he's self-conscious about his ability to engage in these topics. Also, he never helps my mom in the kitchen, and it makes me angry that he makes her get up and get food for him. And last week, I was really close to telling him to get his own fucking pizza rather than making my mom get it, but I feel like that isn't my place. I did tell my mom she needs to teach him about feminism, and she said she knows. What do you think? Should I talk to my dad or stay out of my parents' marriage?
I generally come down on the side of stay the fuck out of your parents' marriage. The fact that your parents are still married after all these years, when most people's parents, at least in my social circles, tend to have divorced long ago, is a sign that maybe something's working. And who knows? Who knows what's up with your mother? Maybe being ordered to go get her layabout husband another slice of pizza turns your mother on. Who knows? Maybe your parents are in a DS relationship. Is that something you want to pry out of mom in a heart-to-heart conversation? Maybe not. As for your dad, asshole comments about queers, asshole comments about feminism, those sometimes, I have a lot of asshole relatives. I am an asshole relative, and sometimes asshole relatives make jokes or snide remarks or say asshole-y things to open up the topic for conversation. Those moments when your dad says something asshole-y, engage with your dad about that assholery. Debate with your dad. And you can do that while at the same time staying the fuck out of your parents' marriage. If you are genuinely concerned that your mother is being abused and badly used when she is ordered to march her ass into the kitchen and bring your dad a pizza or a beer, you can have that convo with mom. Mom, bothers me when dad orders you around. And then see what mom says. Maybe it bothers her too, and she needs to link arms with you and stage a little intervention with her asshole husband, also known as your asshole dad. Or maybe she's fine with this. Maybe she likes this. Maybe this is one way your mom takes care of him, and there are lots of ways your dad takes care of her, and it is a back and forth, even if you don't perceive the back and forth. But stay the fuck out. That said, you can stay the fuck out and still have a convo with your dad when he says asshole-y things. You can engage, and you can have a convo with your mom and express your concerns while at the same time staying the fuck out of their marriage. And that may seem like a contradiction. Stay the fuck out. Have the conversations. You can have the conversations. You can express your concern. You can engage. You can tell someone you're worried about them while at the same time not staging some sort of massive intervention, not having a throwdown with dad or dad and mom telling them that things in their relationship have to change because things in their relationship don't quite align with your feminist principles and the kind of egalitarianism you would like to see modeled in their relationship is absent. Yeah, don't go there. Have the convo and then let them sort their relationship out themselves. No need to intervene in that aggressive way unless there is abuse, unless your father is emotionally, psychologically, or physically abusive, in which case an intervention is absolutely required, in which case you must get involved in your parents' marriage. But if they're just interpersonal dynamics that leave you feeling uncomfortable, yeah, no intervention, no big fucking throwdown. That's what I mean by stay the fuck out. But you can pull mom aside, you can have lunch with mom alone and say, there are things in your relationship with dad. Sometimes give me pause. How do you feel about them? And if she's at ease and peace with these dynamics, butt the fuck out. Resume butting the fuck out. Make your gentle inquiries around the margins. But otherwise, stay the fuck out. Because careful. Careful if you pry into a relationship that there are issues, there are things that annoy you, particularly if it's your parents' relationship. Careful if you pry. Because you might find out some shit about your parents that you would rather not know.
Hey, Dan. I've been casually seeing a man for the last handful of months. We don't see each other often. So in those months, we've only seen each other probably a total of 5 or 6 times. And it's been fun. He's very nice. And a couple of the times that we've been together, we've both gotten super hammered. So the sex was, you know, acceptable because I was too drunk to really have any demands. Here's the problem. Yesterday I saw him and I decided to bring up to him that I had been frustrated because the previous time we hung out, he came over, I gave him head, and then he just left after he came with no regard whatsoever to my orgasm. So yesterday we saw each other and I brought it up to him and I asked him, you know, do you not enjoy eating pussy? What's the deal? And his response was, oh, I'll only eat it if you get right out of the shower. So my question is this bullshit? I mean, I think it's ridiculous, for starters. Second of all, it made me feel like I disgust him. And third of all, it kind of takes away from the spontaneity of sex. Like, I don't really want to be sleeping with someone who can't be in the moment. And I need to get my pussy eaten, goddammit. And I don't feel like I should need to have to take a shower first. Anyway, my question is this enough of a reason to stop seeing someone?
That first time that he blew a load down your throat and then jumped up and grabbed his pants and left, that was a good enough reason to stop seeing someone. You could have cut it off there. Obviously, you're still interested in him. You're still attracted to him. Otherwise, you wouldn't have inquired about his deal with your pussy. And I want to weigh in and say, yeah, his demands are unreasonable. Although, I don't know what your personal hygiene practices look like exactly. Are you a once every other week shower type of gal? They're out there in the world. I sat next to one on the subway just the other day. If you are that girl, the once every other week shower type, I don't think it's unreasonable for him to say, hey, take a shower. I've told women who go down on men who don't practice good personal hygiene that they can say, yeah, I will suck your dick after you get out of the shower. Gotten letters from women who the guy they're going down on doesn't practice good personal hygiene, and they can smell the shit stank wafting off his dingleberry-encrusted asshole. And yeah, I think you can send someone to the bathroom to take a shower at that moment, particularly if the leverage, the benefit, the commodified exchange is shower for blowjob. And if you present the same sort of personal hygiene challenges that that kind of guy presents to his female partners, I think your male partner is perfectly within rights to say, yeah, I will eat your pussy right after you take your first shower this week. But if you're a daily or every other daily bather, shower, if you do practice good personal hygiene, and this is his response, that you must scrub that thing the instant before I press my face into it? Fuck no, don't put up with that. Kick that fucking asshole to the curb. That's bullshit. Asterisk, if you practice good personal hygiene. Double asterisk, if you don't practice good personal hygiene, yeah, go take a shower and then he'll eat your pussy. Hey, everybody, I wanted to tell you about Movement Watches, and I have a very special guest here in the studio to help me tell you about Movement Watches. They're stylish. You're stylish. Tell the people who you are.
Hey, this is Terry. I am Dan's
husband. My husband.
That's right.
You are my husband.
That's right.
And you are wearing right now your Movement Watch.
They sent me the Black Link Classic Series watch. I'm a size queen. And so when I picked out my watch, I picked the biggest one they had and I picked black so it would go with my leather. I like metal bands. So I picked out the black metal band that matched the watch and I love it.
And a few years ago, everyone was saying watches were out. People had stopped wearing watches because our phones are our watches and our computers and our internet and our everything, but they're back.
I go to a lot of events like the symphony, chamber music, concerts that private concerts that need quiet and you don't need things vibrating or tootling at you. So I don't like to wear a smartwatch when I go to those events. You know, dark rooms, you can't have your phone out in a dark room. You'll get in trouble. So I don't like to have a smartwatch or my phone out all the time. They're distracting. And the Movement Watch is absolutely perfect. It's big. It's readable. And it's elegant and looks totally refined. It goes with my leather and it goes with my tuxedos. It's the perfect accessory for everything.
And they start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at a $400 to $500 watch. Movement gets you that watch for under $100. They're all about looking good and keeping it simple. And they won't blow your wrist up with text messages when you're at the dark room behind the symphony. Is that right? Is that how that works?
Yeah, something like that.
Movement's come a long way from crowdfunded kids working out of a living room, and now it's not just watches. They have collections for both men and women, and they've expanded to sunglasses and fashion-forward bracelets for women. Movement figured out that by selling online, they're able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price for fashion-forward, fashion-conscious consumers like my husband. With Movement watches, you'll get classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. And right now, you'll get how much off?
15% off today.
With free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage. See why the Movement keeps growing. Check out Movement's expanding collection. Again, go to mvmt.com/savage to join the Movement.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 24-year-old bi-curious cis female living outside of the political dumpster fire of Washington, D.C. My question has to do with dating women, which is something I've never done. I've been the very special guest star in a few threesomes with couples who I just kind of randomly came across on Tinder. I thoroughly enjoyed all of them. But I mean, the vast majority of my sexual experiences overall have definitely been with men. And like I said, the only encounters I've had with women is with their man present. But lately, I've been really wondering what it'd be like to have a one-on-one experience with a female, and I'm really digging the idea of not having someone with a penis around kind of orchestrating the whole thing and just, you know, getting that female energy and just one-on-one experience. But I'll admit, part of me getting turned on by this is motivated by like loving the idea of telling my male partner about it. And I think that kind of makes me feel like an asshole if I were to pursue a sexual relationship with a lesbian or bisexual female while knowing that part of me is enjoying it so much for heterosexually motivated reasons. I mean, to be absolutely clear, I'm very interested in pleasuring a woman and receiving pleasure from a woman, and my satisfaction from that isn't hinging on only the ability to tell my male partner. But I still somehow feel like a poser if I were to try to seduce a woman when my feelings are so purely physical. Of course, I wouldn't mislead anyone. I'd be very, you know, upfront. And I know that, you know, women, lesbian women as well, do, you know, want to have no string attached, you know, physical, purely physical, no romantic feeling sex. But I don't know. I feel like it just kind of would be like I was using them. Also, am I wrong to view myself as primarily heterosexual when I do have such obvious strong sexual attraction to women? Is this just some bullshit beating around the bush, you know, from calling myself bisexual? I just try to make sense of it and how to go about, you know, being with women, which is what I want in a very basic sense.
Just last week, the topic of lopsided, quote unquote, lopsided bisexuality came up in Savage Love, my syndicated sex advice column. There's been a lot of discussion about lopsided bisexuality for years, a necessary and overdue discussion, acknowledgement of the reality of most people's, most bisexual people's lived experience of their own bisexuality, which is that it is lopsided. A bisexual person may have a stronger romantic attraction to one sex or the other sex, which kind of flies in the face of a lot of bi sloganeering in the first 20 years-ish of the LGBT civil rights movement. We fall in love with people, not genitals. Not as it turned out in the end. There are a lot of bisexual people out there who are what are now known as bisexual heteroromantic. There are also bisexual people out there who are biromantic. They're equally attracted to male or female or anybody else along that gender spectrum partners. And there are bi people who are homoromantic, who are bisexual but primarily attracted romantically to members of their own sex. So you are most likely not a blocked up, not a constipated bisexual. You are most likely bisexual in the way that I think the majority of bisexuals are bisexual. You're attracted to people of both sexes or all points along the gender spectrum, and you are primarily or exclusively romantically attracted. You want to partner with, couple up with men, opposite sex partners. That is common. It does not disqualify you from identifying as bisexual or putting yourself out there. Robin Oakes, bisexual activist, crafted this expansive, multi-sentence, paragraph-long definition of bisexuality that really captures you and I think most bisexuals out there. I call myself bisexual, Oakes says, because I acknowledge that I have in myself the potential to be attracted romantically and or sexually to people of more than one sex and or gender, not necessarily at the same time, not necessarily in the same way, and not necessarily to the same degree. That's you. You fit in Robin Oak's definition of bisexuality, which is the operative, I think, and best definition of bisexuality floating around out there right now. When you go out there seeking sex with women, solo on your own, not unicorn style, just be honest. Just put it out there that you are sexually attracted to men and women, but romantically, it's men for you. And then the women that you're attracted to, lesbian or bi, who might want to get with you, they can opt in or opt out. If what they're looking for is romance, if they're attracted to you in that way, if they want a relationship with you, they'll know, because they'll be fully informed, because you will tell them, that they shouldn't fuck you. And you will find, you will sift through the available bi and lesbian women until you find the women, and there will be lots of them out there who want to fuck you and don't want to date you.
Hey, everyone. Sooner or later, you are going to need to build a website. And when that day comes, you simply have to use Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Creating your site with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. Do you run your own business? You can design a great-looking online store with Squarespace's e-commerce templates, all without a single plugin. Are you working on a political project? God, I hope so. Use Squarespace to get your organizing done. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box, and they have great analytics so you can see how your project is growing. So make it yourself with the help of Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage, and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 20-year-old married woman living in the Midwest, and I guess I'd like to preface this question by saying to all of the other young listeners out there that, yes, Dan's right, getting married really young is a big mistake. Right now, I am getting ready to go through a divorce, and we're kind of at the stage, I'm married to another woman, her and I are at the stage where we know what's happening. We're kind of transitioning into this friends who live together role. I have a couple of dating apps. And I guess my question is, how do I rule this out to new potential dating partners? I don't really want anything serious for a while. However, you know, getting to know people, do you have any advice for me on how I bring this up? Obviously, it looks like I have really poor judgment, and, you know, I do. But what's the best way to talk about this? It's something I'm kind of becoming ashamed of, and I don't want to regret the time that I've spent with my current wife, but I also want to be able to move forward and be taken seriously.
I wish I could have been there. If you had invited me to the wedding, I would have shown up and slapped the rings out of your hands. Getting married before you were 20, at 19 or 18, in some states, it is still tragically, in this country, legal for people to get married, with their parents' permission, at 13. That needs to end. But yeah, oh my God, what a stupid fucking thing to do. I don't say this to shame you, and you're not the only person who's made this mistake, but oh my God. Nobody should get married that young, as you now know. I worry about a lot of young queers out there who can, for the time being, we'll see what happens with the new Supreme Court. For the time being, all these young queers out there who can get married, because we're told when we're young and we're queer, depending on where we live and what our families and faith traditions are like, we're told that we're sick and we're damaged and that our love is not real. And then we come out, and to prove that our love is real, we make premature, showy commitments. Used to be that we could make those premature, showy commitments without having to then go and hire a divorce attorney when that premature, showy commitment came to shit, which often happens. And that is not your shame. Most relationships end, many fail, but most relationships that we're going to be in over the course of our lives are not going to be the relationship we're going to be in until the end of our lives, because we have to cast around and hopefully in the end find somebody who works out for us long term, if long term is what we want. Not everybody wants long term, and for some people, many, many serially monogamous relationships are what works for them. But yeah, everybody makes a mistake at your age, which is why you don't want to lock a mistake in, a potential mistake at 18. If at 18 you feel like this is the person I want to marry and spend the rest of my life with, and it's true that you're going to spend the rest of your life with this person, they'll still be there when you're 28 and you can marry them then, or when you're 32 and you can marry them then. All right, not to pile on, not to make you feel worse than you already feel. What do you say to people that you date now? You just tell them the fucking truth. When you were young and stupid, you did a young and stupid thing. Everybody, when they're young and stupid, does young and stupid things. No one you tell that to is not going to have young and stupids in their past. Some will have the identical young and stupid in their past. Some people that you meet will have gotten married at 20, at 22, at 23. And you'll bond over that. It'll be something that you have in common. And some people you meet won't have that particular mistake in their young and stupid past. But they will have equally consequential mistakes. They will have made equally consequential mistakes, if not the same mistake. And if you tell someone that you were married, and they judge or shame you more than I did earlier, but if you tell someone that you were married and married young and they judge or shame you, fuck that person. That's not somebody you want to be with. That's someone who is looking around in the life of someone that they're dating for things that they can wield as cudgels. If you tell someone something about your past and they pick it up and beat you with it or hold it over your head in the course of the relationship you're in with that person now, get the fuck away from that person. That person is malicious and controlling and kind of emotionally abusive, and you shouldn't want to be with that person. Again, as with so many things that we discuss on this show, you're telling someone one thing about you and their reaction is going to tell them everything you need to know about them. So don't be embarrassed or ashamed. You made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. I'm concerned that young queers are particularly susceptible to making this particular mistake because we want to prove to our parents who told us that queer love isn't real love, that they're wrong. Our love is so strong and so powerful and so real that even though we're only 19, we're getting married. That's how real and strong and powerful it is. Please don't make that mistake. Please wait. If it's foolish for straight people to do it, it's foolish for queer people to do it. And it is a generally acknowledged fact that it is a foolish thing for someone to marry in their teens or 20s. Sometimes it's a foolish thing for someone to marry in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s. Marriage ain't for everybody. Here at the Savage Love Cast, we want your bed to be inviting because you never know when one of the tech-savvy at-risk youth are going to wind up in it. That's why you should get some beautiful new sheets from Boll & Branch. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means they start out super soft and they get even softer over time. You buy directly from them, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews, and Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and Fast Company are all talking about Boll & Branch. Boll & Branch only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing. They donate a portion of every sale to charity to help fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund, but I don't think you're going to want to send these sheets back. There's no risk, and there's no reason not to give Boll & Branch a try. To get you started right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com using the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. My first job was when I was in high school. I was working at a daycare, so I took care of four-year-olds. And now it's 13 years later, and I realized one of my new coworkers is one of the little ones I took care of. And now he's a teenager, and he doesn't remember me, but I remember him. So I'm wondering, would it be weird to say to him, hey, by the way, I took care of you when you were 4 years old, or do you think that might make him uncomfortable and I should just keep it to myself?
The answer is obvious, and we'll get to it. Well, we have our questions, though, and you didn't leave a callback number, so we can't call you back and interrogate you. It is the sense of the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth Senate that there's something up, because why are you calling a sex podcast, a sex and relationship advice show, about this boy if you don't have sex and relationships on your mind. Why are you calling? Why are you calling us? Why aren't you calling Prudy? Why aren't you calling Carolyn Hacks? Why aren't you writing to Ask Amy or Dear Abby? Why me? And the sense of the tech savvy at-risk youth senate is that you want to fuck this kid. I don't ascribe to that, actually. I dissent from the sense of the Senate. I think you just called me out of habit. I think you called me because you listened to the show and the number was stuck in your head, 206-302-2064. It was just stuck in your head, and I was the first person that came to mind. I don't think you necessarily want to fuck this kid. Looking at the timeline, doing the math, you are roughly 29 or 30 years old, and this kid is 17 or 18 years old. I do not think, and here's the advice part of the response, as opposed to the insinuation section of the response, I do not think that you should go to this kid and say, hey, I remember you when you were four. He's a teenage boy, probably at his first job, where he may feel a little insecure about his youth and inexperience, and having a coworker come up and say, I remember when you were shitting in your diapers, I remember giving you a juice box, is probably going to make him feel more self-conscious. What 17 and 18-year-olds, particularly at their first job, want more than anything in the world is to be perceived as a grown-up, as an adult, as capable and competent. And you throwing it out there that, hey, I remember you when you were four. I was taking care of you when you were four. I was picking snot off your nose and helping you wipe your ass when you were four. Will hamper that. Will make it a problem. Make it more difficult for him to be perceived the way he would like to be perceived, which is as a grown-up. So at least for now, shut the fuck up. Keep it to yourself. Don't tell him. Don't remind him that he was 4 years old. Don't turn him into a four-year-old in the eyes of your colleagues and his coworkers by blurting this out in a staff room full of people or joking about it. Let him be the adult that he is for a while. Let him establish himself in this workplace. And if you begin to have a friendly relationship, then you can roll it out. You can say, hey, I didn't bring this up earlier because you were new and I didn't want you to be self-conscious, but that convo is at least 6 months away. And if you want to fuck this guy, what's the vote of the tech savvy at-risk youth? Let's look around the room. Don't fuck this guy. Don't fuck this guy. Everybody says don't fuck this guy. Would be weird to fuck somebody you took care of when you were four. That would be super weird. So don't fuck this guy. If that's why you called me. I don't think that's why you called me. I think you called me because the number was stuck in your head. The tech-savvy at-risk youth, on the other hand, they have filthy fucking perverted minds.
Hi, I have a question. I've been married for 20 years. My wife and I are in our late 40s. We've gone through some dry spells of sex. I definitely have a higher libido. We've gone as long as 2 years without sex. Things got a little stale, and we decided to maybe open the marriage up a little bit. She met a guy at work that she was having a fling with, and that ended after about 6 months, and now she's met a second guy, and I love hearing about her, and I think it's pretty hot, and we have good sex afterwards. But my question is, I'm starting to feel a little left out. She says I should go meet someone myself, but I'm not sure how to go about it. I don't know if I trust websites with all hacking. We live in a very small town. We have school-age children. I'm afraid of somebody finding out and getting out. I'm just not sure what I should do.
If your wife's fucking coworkers, dudes at work in your small town, odds are everybody already knows. 6 month affair with a coworker, not usually a secret that keeps. But I can understand why you're worried about putting yourself out there, particularly in a small town where people are judgy. And there have been documented cases of workplace discrimination against people in open relationships, particularly straight people in open relationships. Even instances where people have lost their kids to exes in custody disputes because the new relationship that mom or dad was in was an open one. So your caution and your concern, justifiable. But I wonder if the cow that you're worried about hasn't already wandered out of the barn, that people knowing in your small town if your wife was fucking somebody she works with for 6 long months. All right, I get in trouble when this topic comes up because this is a fact of open relationships, opposite sex couples division, where it's very easy for the woman to line up dick, and it's a lot harder for the dude to find women who will sleep with a married man. Finding men who sleep with married women, not hard. Finding women who sleep with married men, considerably more difficult. And it can cause a lot of stress and friction in the relationship. It can put a strain on the relationship. If the wife is banging away with lots of other dudes and the husband, although banging the wife more often now, and you two are having better and more exciting sex now, so congratulations, one of the fringe benefits often of opening a relationship. The husband, feels deprived and stews and feels neglected and begins to resent the wife for her romantic or sexual success with others while he is home alone with his dick in his hand. I think if the wife is interested in the open relationship succeeding and her continuing to have the freedom that she obviously enjoys, your wife, to have the freedom she obviously enjoys, that she should give you an assist, that it is in the best interest, not just of the dude in the open opposite sex relationship, for the wife to do what she can to help him, but for the wife. It's in her best interest too, if she wants the relationship to continue to be open and joyful, as opposed to stressful and then a lot of resentment coming in and then conflict and fights and the relationship ultimately closing up again. So it might be a good idea, not just for you, but for your wife as well, if your wife attends some swingers events with you, even if she's not going to sleep with anybody else, if she's got her boyfriend on the side and she just wants you too, she can still go with you, because single men can't go to swingers events typically by themselves. So attend with you. Also, if you put yourself out there on apps or you take out a personal ad or you meet someone, it can be very helpful if the wife vouches for the husband. If your ad on your app that you're in an open relationship and you're seeking extras includes your wife and access to your wife, links to her account too, so that anyone you're interested in, who's interested in sleeping with you, can verify that you're in an open relationship and they aren't being lied to and aren't party to an infidelity, that can go a long way as well. I get in trouble. People get mad at me. Women shouldn't have to do this extra labor to help their male partners get laid. Yeah, I get it. They shouldn't have to. My point is they might want to, because if the wheels come off that open relationship that she's enjoying, she may not be in that open relationship for much longer. It may lead to the collapse of the primary relationship, or her primary partner may insist on closing the relationship up again because the jealousy and the resentment is too much. So, yep, I agree. Doesn't have to, but might want to.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old male-identified homo from New York. I've been listening to your show on and off since I was 15, and I have to say you are a true American treasure to us all. Please forgive me if this question has been addressed 1,000 times before, but I was hoping you could impart some wisdom on the art of fisting. Up until a few weeks ago, I had never tried anything bigger than a toy with a 6-inch diameter, but my curiosities took hold of me, and I went down the rabbit hole, literally. I got a few larger toys and have had some incredible solo sessions with just hands, and finally managed to take my entire fist the other week. It's honestly so much fun, and the stretching really turns me on intensely, and I'm eager to find the right partner to do it with. But my dilemma is that since this experimentation, I've had sex bottoming with a few guys of varying sizes, ranging from super, super big, like really big, and a little below average, some others. And I have to say, the dicks did not feel quite the same as they had pre-anal stretching adventure. They felt good, but my ass stretched open and fully relaxed so much more quickly and easily that it almost felt unsatisfying, I hate to say. From all that I've read and learned, I have the impression that the general consensus around fisting is that your hole just kind of snaps back shut after play, unless you really traumatize it, and you're just able to handle larger toys and dicks more easily. But your tightness, quote unquote, doesn't really get compromised. You just kind of go from JV to varsity in the anal experience arena. I just don't feel my ass gripping the dick like it did before. I'm really good at relaxing my body, but maybe now I've trained it to relax too much. Do I do Kegels, or maybe try taking a month or two off in between sessions? Something about going varsity really scares me, but I honestly cannot stop. Yours truly, concerned reaming enthusiast.
In response to a question about fisting from a young gay man, roughly your same age, in my column, I quoted Dr. Peter Shallett, who said there is a misconception that these activities, we're talking about fisting, can cause damage by stretching or tearing the tissue, when actually the anus is very elastic and much of the, quote, permission to enter actually involves intentional relaxation of the muscles by the bottom and not force applied by the top. So what I think that you've done, the corner you've turned is not you're so permanently stretched out that you can't enjoy dick. You say that you're a very relaxed person. You're able to relax and open up for the the giant toys and your own fist and maybe somebody else's fist down the road. And what you're doing now when you bottom, when you have anal sex, is you are opening up in the same way. You need to bear down. You need to do your Kegels. I think if you're fisting on the regular, I think if you're not fisting on the regular, it's a good idea to do your Kegels. I never get fisted. I didn't like Kegels. Do your Kegels. But you can intentionally relax and open up. That's what you've learned in your experimenting with toys and increasingly larger toys. And what you've got to do now is bear down, the opposite of relax. Not tense up so that bottoming is painful, but grip. Close up. Do the Kegel with the dick in your ass. Shut it down. Grip it. Grab it with your sphincter. You can do it. So you've trained yourself to relax and open up. You've got to train yourself to know when not to relax that much, not to open up that much. So anal is still pleasurable for you. May not be as pleasurable for you going forward as fisting in large toys, not because the physical sensations are any different, but because the psychological sensations are better with fisting, that you like that bigness thing. That bigness thing trips an erotic trigger for you that just dick, even a very large dick, can't trigger. So it's possible you may be one of those people who toys and fisting is the ultimate and anal's okay. And you found your ultimate and now everything else pales in comparison. It doesn't mean the stuff that pales in comparison isn't as good as it used to be. It's just the new thing that you've gotten into is better. You can still enjoy the good and the stuff you were into previously. And finally, wrestling here with you're describing yourself as literally having gone down the rabbit hole when what happened was no rabbits were involved. No rabbit holes were involved. The holes of no rabbits were violated. You literally stuffed some giant things up your hole, which in no way compares or comports with that thing you said literally happened with you and a rabbit hole, unless you were getting fisted by the Mad Hatter.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 52-year-old cisgendered gay male. And tonight I was having sex with a young man and I was bottoming and all of a sudden I felt a thermometer in my butt. I asked him what the thermometer was for and he basically said, oh, taking your temperature. And it was like, okay, this is kind of strange. And I asked him why. And he said he just wanted to know that my butt was the right temperature for sex. I've never heard of this before. Is this really a thing? Why would someone want to take my butt temperature? Not too sure.
My hunch is that he has a medical fetish. And rather than confess that he has a medical fetish to you, he pulled out of his own ass this other explanation that literally makes no sense. Wanted to make sure your ass is the right temperature. What is your ass, a chicken cutlet? So you're going to get salmonella from your ass if it's not thoroughly cooked? No. But he's probably struggling with kink shame. Some people struggling with kink shame will do this thing. Well, they will explain their turn on in terms that are more off-putting than just owning the kink. Why are you interested in this? Well, because blah, 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 blah. And what will come out of their mouths is some alternate explanation that makes no sense, is ridiculous on its face, and is more off-putting and more disconcerting than just owning the kink. That said, he shouldn't have busted a thermometer out on you without prior negotiation. That is not a move you pull on someone. You don't transition to a medical scene or medical play. You don't pull a speculum out and stuff it in someone or a thermometer without some conversation about your sexual interests and your kinks. So the guy is deeply weird, deeply conflicted, deeply inconsiderate, and not a good sex partner, and you shouldn't fuck him again. And if that guy's listening, or if you, caller, send him a link to the show so he hears, hey, dude, own your medical fetish. Don't freak people out by stuffing thermometers in their asses to make sure that they're the right temperature. There's only two things people are going to take away from that. Your nuts or your nuts. Tell them the truth. Medical play and a thermometer in the butt kind of turns you on. You hope they don't mind. Would they be okay with you taking their temperature? If you're charming and upbeat and funny about it and solicitous of their kinks and their turn-ons and concerned with their comfort and their consent, they'll react positively. More positively than they will react if you just surprise them with a thermometer or a speculum or an enema hose in their butt.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old transgender man from Massachusetts, and I was just listening to episode 611 from today when you were responding to the woman who had questions for her transgender friend couple. I thought the way you answered it was really great, and that a lot of trans people don't want to be put on the Trans 101 education program, but this couple clearly felt comfortable trusting her and her family. And sometimes I think, especially when someone's living stealth, not telling many people that they are trans, it's really a huge relief to find an ally and to feel comfortable coming out to them. And then sometimes it can even be kind of exciting to get those questions that someone hasn't necessarily been asked in a while, and especially in the appropriate way that she seems to be going about it. So I just wanted to say thank you for responding to that caller, because I think that she's starting a beautiful friendship with a nice, lovely couple. Just a wonderful thing in today's world.
Hi, this is a message in response to the Australian gentleman caller on episode 611, who found his cousin's girlfriend on Tinder. I agree with what you said, Dan, about, they could be in an open relationship, but here's another tidbit. I have been personally in a very happy relationship for almost 4 years now, and I only recently discovered that my personal Tinder app and my OkCupid account are still open. I just forgot. So, yeah, dude, don't even worry about it. Maybe she forgot to delete her Tinder app. Don't butt into their business.
Hi, Dan. This is the married woman from the Magnum 610 who was wondering whether she should tell her husband about her crush on this younger guy because she was running out of slutty stories to tell him. You told me to just go ahead and tell him, and I was really still too afraid because I just didn't know how he was going to take it. I didn't want it to change the way he felt about me, and I just decided I was going to just get over it. But he made it really easy for me. He tied me up and spanked me and told me to tell him who I was fantasizing about. I don't know how he knew. Maybe he listens to the Magnum. I thought I disguised my voice really well, but maybe not. But I told him, and then he fucked the shit out of me. And afterwards, he told me he thought I should fuck this guy. And I still don't think I'm going to because, again, I like his girlfriend and, you know, I don't want to be party to anything that's not ethical. But we ended up having a really wonderful conversation, a really honest one about the possibility of opening up our marriage for real. And now I'm kind of keeping my eye out for somebody, some hot young guy who it would be appropriate for me to fuck who does not have a girlfriend. So thank you. And thanks to my husband, if you are listening to this, honey, that was fucking awesome.
Oh my God, what a great way to end this week's show. Thank you for calling in to share that update. And we are going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. The deadline for submitting films to Hump, my Dirty Little Porn Film Festival that tours the country, is coming up in September. Go to humpfilmfest.com and click on submit for information about submitting your film to Hump. There's thousands of dollars worth of prizes awarded by Hump audiences, including a $10,000 Best in Show award for the top filmmaker. And all the films that go out on tour, each filmmaker gets a percentage of every single ticket sold. So please think about entering Hump. Again, go to humpfilmfest.com and click on submit for all the info that you'll need. Listen to me on Blabbermouth, the Strangers Politics podcast, every week with host Eli Sanders, Rich Smith, Katie Herzog. We're all there each week talking about what the fuck is going on. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Debbie Herbenick on Twitter at Debbie Herbenick. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.